From the Draco Vista Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, unlocking secrets of writing, conversing with masters of the craft, and just having a lot of fun. It's the Dragon Page, cover to cover.
I think I'm going to have to do a video just so that people can see how flabbergasted I am that I have nothing to do except push two buttons.
I know. It's really scary. You're like panicking here over not having anything to do.
I have nothing to do. I push two buttons and the show starts. It's not like anyway.
Yeah, we're going to fix that.
I'm Michael Armenengay, by the way.
And I am Michael Stackpole.
And this is The Dragon Page. This is that show that we have done and been doing for 10 years now I've been doing this show.
It's really scary.
Yeah, in February. February marks my 10th anniversary of this show. It's like, wow, I can't believe how long I've been doing this show.
Well, and now we're into what, third or fourth incarnation of how it's being done?
No, more than that. Yeah. Actually, I think I'm on, what is this? I'm calling it Dragon Page 40.2.
Okay, 40.2. Well, there we go. All right.
Because it went, anyway, that's not the history of the Dragon Page. Although, new to the Dragon Page, it might be interesting, I guess, for you.
Well, and you write up your notes on the Dragon Page for the e-publishing book on the Dragon Page that you'll eventually to do. You
know, yeah.
It's going to be important to explain all that.
Wow. So welcome back, or I should say we're welcoming back or whatever.
Right, and just to recap for those of you who haven't been with us for a while, we really, after taking a hiatus this summer, we're refocusing the show more into, we've talked about electronic publishing for a long, long time, and we'll still bring you news, and one of the first things we get to discuss is a news thing, but we're really orienting this show to be a do-it-yourself kind of walking you guys through the steps of how to actually now get involved in the whole e-publishing revolution, digital publishing revolution. And we're using, among other things, as an example, we're using your book, because you just got rights back to Mistress of Dragons, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one that I have been so sickened by from the day one of that. That book went into print in 2000. And right. I did the self-published thing with that. I guess, can I say who did it? Publish America, I guess? That's no problem.
Yeah. Well,
it's out there.
Yeah, hear that name, Publish America, don't go with them.
Yes.
Learn from his mistakes.
Learn from my mistakes. Primarily, they had an interesting plan back in the day. Well, I actually started with Ex Libris because... Right. Who was it that was advocating that? The author that was advocating that, Piers Anthony.
Oh, right.
Piers Anthony was really hot for saying this is going to be the greatest thing ever. So I jumped down that rabbit hole thinking, okay, this is a good idea. However, it's problems with that. So I was looking for something different, and Publish America came along and went, oh, we're just like traditional press. No, they're not like traditional press. No. So I ended up with a book that went in, basically, I sent them the manuscript thinking we were going to go through a process, and I ended up with a book in my hand with this really crappy cover on the front of it going, I didn't ask for this. We never did a thing.
Right,
we never talked about editing. We never talked about any cover design. We never talked about anything. Right. I sent them a manuscript. They sent me back a book and went, hey, you're published. I went, whoa, wait a minute. That's not what I sent you that manuscript in to do.
Yeah, this is kind
of
like,
I was published in like 48 hours and I went, wait.
This is the publishing equivalent of being on the plane with the parachute and going near the opening to see what it looked like out there and getting a big shove.
And getting a big shove, yeah. So that book has been in print for over almost 12 years now. And it's... I haven't promoted it. I haven't hardly done anything with it because I'm not. I was never happy with that book.
Well, and
I've never been happy with that book because there's parts. The back half of that book is a mess, and I know it's a mess.
Well, we are gonna get into we're gonna get more into the things that we can do to help to walk you through. I mean, I teach a lot of how to write classes, and you know the whole revision process and how to approach those things. This is stuff that we're going to be walking you through, and obviously all the listeners we'll be able to walk through it at the same time. But
you have some news. Let's hit some other topics, because as much as we're going to talk about writing and the books and so forth, we're going to try and incorporate as much for you non-writing people as possible.
Well, and for the writing people, I mean, this is one of the saddest things that you end up seeing in the writing community is this: people who sit down today and they take a look at where the market is today, and they keep their head down and they say, in 5 years I'll have a book done and then I'm going to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you think about where publishing is today and you look back 5 years ago, somebody just crawling out of their hole with their big novel today is going to be facing, you know, everything they thought was right back then, you know, isn't. So you do have to be aware of the news. You do have to keep track of a number of different things. And the point that we want to talk about just real quickly here is to explain what the agency model actually means.
Mm-hmm.
Because the European Union, the European Economic Union, has launched an investigation into Apple and five large publishers as to whether or not the agency model and the advent of the iBookstore provided them the opportunity to collude in prices, basically to see
price
whether...
Price fixing, basically, is what you're looking
at. Well, to see if it's in violation of the price fixing statutes that
right,
the EU
exactly.
has. And nobody is saying one way or the other. Now, there are a lot of people out there that believe that the agency model is bad, bad, bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard this. Here's how the agency model works. The agency model allows the publishers to set the retail price, the recommended retail price for which the book will sell.
Mm-hmm.
And the online retailers have to sell at that. The other model is what's known as the wholesale model. That's the model that books are normally sold under, where the publishers set the wholesale price, and then the individual retailers can decide whatever retail price they want to mm-hmm. sell these things for. Amazon was doing that, and Amazon was keeping the price of ebooks at $10, at mm-hmm. $9.99.
Sure.
The publishers didn't like that because they felt that they should be getting higher prices, and so they would raise their wholesale price, and Amazon would still, even if Amazon was paying $12.99 for a book,
mm-hmm.
they would still be selling it for $9.99. They would be taking the loss to build up the
exactly.
ebook market.
Because they're trying to get the market started, not trying to basically kill it before it
right.
starts.
Yeah. Now, the people who say that the agency model is bad are the people that point out that this means that the publishers are setting the retail price, and because the publishers are requiring retailers to sell at that particular price, it kills price competition.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true, except, and mm-hmm. this would be a horrible thing if there were a monopoly. But what we're talking about, the whole digital publishing revolution,
mm-hmm.
has totally shattered that monopoly. Here's where the agency model is beneficial. And it's beneficial to indie authors and to readers who are willing to buy indie authors.
Right.
Because prior to Apple setting up the agency model, in which Apple pays 70% of the revenue back to the publisher, the only game in town really was Amazon.
Exactly.
And Amazon was paying authors 35% of the cover price.
Mm-hmm.
Once Apple came out at 70%, Amazon raised all of its royalty rates for books between $3 and $10 to that 70%.
Right.
So overnight, the catalog that I and every independently published author had available for the Kindle doubled in value.
Yes.
You know, my checks went from $500 to $1,000 overnight.
Exactly.
This is not a bad thing.
No.
And
it's a fairer model.
It's a fairer model. Plus, indie authors can charge less.
Mm-hmm.
The big publishers are charging, you know, $12.99, $14.99 for their novels. And if the book is published by a New York house, by a legacy house, authors have no control over what the price is. You know, we literally, they don't ask, they don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we're publishing independently, we can publish for less and we make more,
mm-hmm.
make more than we ever would out of the traditional thing. So, you know, if you don't like the high prices, look for independent authors and support their independent efforts.
Exactly.
Because so the agency model, if you are looking to make money out of the ebook market, the agency model is an absolute godsend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to complain about the high prices of traditionally published books, you know, you are absolutely spot on, and I don't like them any more than anybody else does. But writers are now publishers,
mm-hmm.
and readers can be paying less if they're going, if they shop around, they look a little bit more. And they go with some of the independent authors.
It really comes down to taking control of your business. And this yep. is really what we have to change the focus on. And I really want to start pushing that concept to all you folks out there, is that stop thinking yourself as a writer. Stop thinking yourself as an artist. Start thinking of what you're doing as a business, because it is. That's what you are doing. You are a creative. You're a content creator that is trying to market and sell their product in a business model, period.
Look, just to shift the analogy ever so slightly, you know, you are a chef.
Who, oh, there you go. Beautiful.
You know, you're a chef that owns a restaurant. Okay?
Culinary artist.
Exactly
the same thing.
You have to worry about plating all of those meals. You have to worry about writing and everything like that. But there's also the other considerations you have to have of, you know, what's the silverware going to look like?
Yeah, cost of goods sold.
Exactly.
What's your business? What's your life expenses? What's it going to cost for advertising right. and marketing? How are you going to get the word out? How do you improve on your play? It's exactly the same model, people. Exactly.
Right. Now,
and I would even take the analogy to the next step, where it has a shelf life, just like the food. Your food is only good for so long.
True.
And then you start having to discount it because it's day old bread, or
I'm not going to go so far as that, because
but you can't take that out that far.
Books don't spoil.
No.
Okay.
No. But the freshness of a story arc does.
Right. But then, and see, this is what's going to be fun about doing this show and stuff like that, is because there are different ways to do things.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of writers right now that are thinking of, you know, when a book is a year old, I'm going to discount it, because mm-hmm. they're thinking about the old windowing model of hardback, and then you do a mass market paperback. And so
they're
thinking after a year, the blush is off the bloom. Whereas me, I think of it in another direction. Okay, if I have these books out there, what I want to do is I want to add value. So
right.
if I've got three books in an ersatz trilogy, okay, I can combine them into an omnibus edition. I can add another short story in. Suddenly there's increased value there.
Beautiful.
And so
yeah.
I can leave them out at the regular price, or somebody wants a discounted price if they're coming to the party late, or mm-hmm. or they're willing to spend a little bit more, or they want all these other things, then they can go ahead and they can buy this stuff in this new package.
Yep.
And so it's all about creating value. And I mean, reducing price is creating value for the reader,
yes.
and that may entice people.
And that entices, and that's it. It's using it as a marketing tool for the old stuff that drives your new stuff.
And this is some of the cool stuff about one of the models. We're going to have to do
We're going to cover all of these areas.
Right,
absolutely.
Right. But in the digital original book that I released in October, Perfectly Invisible, first one in my HSS universe, I included the first chapter of another book that I had, that I've got available as an ebook. It's
mm-hmm.
the first of a series. Okay. Since including that chapter along with a click on this and buy it button,
mm-hmm.
I have watched about a 60% increase in the month to month sales of that particular book.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. No kidding. And so that's a really simple marketing tool.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And social and networking out there to Facebook
yep.
and Twitter and everything. All these things. We're going to cover all of these things,
yeah.
folk. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Next year is going to be the rockin' year of nothing but how do we do this?
Absolutely.
Step by step.
Is the long drive to work getting you down? Do you feel like the other drivers want to run you off the road and beat you with the tire iron of life? Relax. Take a break and let the fun of sci-fi news geeking ease your drive time woes. Slice of sci-fi. It's not as good as having a stormtrooper on your hood, but it's close.
Sliceofsci-fi.com.
Mike and Mike, this is Tad from Mesa calling in. Just wanted to comment on a couple things. I'm really excited about the new direction the show is going to be going in. I have one of the editions of Mistress of Dragons, so I'm kind of interested in
so you're the one.
Seeing how that gets changed and watching Mike as he revises it and following that step by step through. I'm not a writer, don't particularly want to be, but I think I have a little story that I'm going to try to work on as you guys go through the show and just see how that turns out, kind of more for fun than anything else.
Fantastic.
Also, I just want to comment on At the Queen's Command was probably one of the best books that I've read in a long time, and so I'm really excited about the sequel coming out, and I'm looking forward to that. And I also have a question for Mike Stackpole here real quick. Just kind of wondering how the Talion's coming along. I bought my copy of it, and I know once you'd sold a certain number of copies, you were going to write the sequel. So I was just kind of wondering how that was coming along and how close we were. Thanks for the show, and I'll be listening for you guys. Thank you. Bye.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. There's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, there really is. Just real quick on the Italian Revenant Challenge. When I released it as an ebook, I said, if I sell 10,000, I'll write the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through last year, I cut that number from 10 to 5,
mm-hmm.
just because of the way sales and the general industry was picking back up. Sales are pretty consistent on that book. I sell about 100, 125 copies a month.
Okay.
So at that rate, and given the sales that we've already got, I'm probably looking at this time next year, starting in on the sequel.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've already got it outlined. I've already got pieces of it written. So, I'm looking forward to that, but it's probably going to be this time next year. So I would guess if things continue, I mean, if people decide that they really want to see it and start buying up copies and, you know, moving it up on the schedule, then, they might have it as early as, the summer of, 2013.
Okay. So. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
The other really cool thing in there was, besides the fact that you actually bought my book, holy cow, really? Yeah. Appreciate that. You're like one of maybe 100 people, I think. but the big thing in there is that, you don't have to be a writer in order to enjoy what we're going to be doing here.
Right.
And I love the idea that you're actually going to kind of dabble a little bit with a short story.
And I really hope that a lot more people will go ahead and do that. I mean, I'll tell you this, that... I'm going to be fairly brutal and straightforward, mm-hmm. as we're talking about this
Absolutely.
Whole process. And, if you've played around with a story, if you've dabbled with a story or you got some ideas and you want to jot stuff down, that's going to put some skin in the game as far as you're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very, very valuable. And I really, having a notebook to jot ideas down in, this is one of the things that I'm going to be challenging Mike to do. This is what I do. I mean, right now in the studio, I've got a brand new, 70-page wire-bound notebook, the same mm-hmm. things you get at, for school taking notes. For every project, I will have one of those and I just record ideas and write down, break down outlines and make sure mm-hmm. that I've got all these things. And that's something that you need to do as we go into the revision of your book.
And I knew you were going to do this. It's bizarre. I knew you were going to tell me. My problem is my dyslexia. That's
right.
And I am, if you have not seen me write, you have no idea how bad my penmanship is because of my dyslexia. It
sure.
truly is. That's the reason. And taking notes is just abysmal. So I can write something down and I would never even be able to read it
right,
again.
Right.
So what I did is I broke down and I bought my iPhone. It's
okay.
on the way.
All right, very
so
good. Very good.
Because the piece of junk that I'm on right now will not let me do the notes that I need
sure,
to be able
sure.
to do. So I will have my iPhone. My iPhone is going to be my lifeline for doing that.
Good.
I'm going to have my notepad program up there so that I can just key it in and type it in as I think of things, just like what you're doing right there.
That's what's important is you've yep. got to have those. And I alternate between, sending myself texts
yeah.
With ideas. If I don't have a piece of paper with me or, having, business cards in your wallet that you're able to write things down mm-hmm. on. You need to have a place where you can get those ideas down and have them on paper and understand this. And this is probably the most critical thing in terms of writing is it doesn't have to be perfect the first time out.
Right.
you just want to get the ideas down, and things will morph. And as you get them down, and as you review them, and as you go back through and look at them, you're going to go, oh, that doesn't quite work anymore, but now I can do this.
Right.
And you'll record that stuff. And it's really, really important. Give yourself a chance to basically brainstorm with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just jot these ideas down, come back and refine them, and figure things out as we go along.
The biggest challenge that's going to pop up for me on this is this book, I was written 12 years ago.
Right.
I have not really, in any real sense of the word, picked this thing up in 12 years.
Right.
I have a story starter for the second book already, right, that I have not looked at in 10 years. And I have no idea even what that is. I don't even know what this story is anymore. That's the thing, is I have to rediscover the story before I can even start working on this story.
And
so that's going to be a challenge.
Well, and I'm gonna suggest that you think about it even further. One of the toughest things, you are actually facing one of the toughest things it is for a writer to do,
mm-hmm,
to take a project that he did X number of years ago, and because you did it that long ago, you've got a mental conception of it, which I guarantee you does not match what's there.
It is completely wrong. Okay. I guarantee it. In fact, I read the first chapter,
right,
of this just the other day, just thinking, okay, I got to get into it. And it is so alien to me that I can't believe I even wrote it. So
what we're going to do is think about this as a total rebuild. Okay. Think about this as, instead of a renovation of a house,
okay,
you are going to raise the house. You are going to save those. You'll save the lumber.
Okay.
You'll save the tile. You'll save the brick.
Okay.
Because you'll be able to use all of those things.
But
okay,
just going to put it all back together again.
But it's going to be put back together again, and how it goes together again is important. And the two real tricks that are going to be important to figure out is, one, you need to look at the world you designed,
mm-hmm,
and figure out if that world actually works as a world or works as a pocket world.
Mm.
Okay, let me explain the difference. Okay, and we've all read these. We've all read stories or novels where the world functions because it's got definitive boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, once you walk past those boundaries, it's all mist and it won't work anymore. Okay, you know,
how complete is your world,
right,
is what you're
exactly
saying.
Exactly. You know, this mystery functions only because there's a blizzard, so they can't get cell phone access out of the valley. Okay. Otherwise, one cell phone call, everything falls apart. Okay.
Gotcha.
Doesn't mean it's not a good story.
It's just, you got to define your boundaries.
Right.
Gotcha.
Exactly. There are certain limitations. And sometimes when we're writing stories, we don't even realize that we put those boundaries in. And one of the ways that you explore those boundaries is, anytime you say, this is a rule of the world,
mm-hmm,
ask yourself, what if I break that rule?
Mm-hmm.
What if I violate that? Okay, so you know, witches can only fly at midnight.
Right.
Okay. Well, what if they can fly all the time? What does that do?
Right.
You know, explain to me why they're not going to.
I've got tremors running through my head, and I cannot get rid of it. You know, it's a perfect analogy to what you're talking about, you know?
Yeah. So you gotta break that stuff down and just challenge yourself, because here's the cool thing, okay? And this is why you want to jot these notes down. This is why you want to give yourself a chance to, mm-hmm, to think on some of these concepts, is because a lot of times when you challenge those preconceptions, when you challenge those rules, you get things that are much, much more interesting,
mm-hmm,
than you ever had before. And you can always, you know, here's the trick, okay?
Okay.
If you don't want something to happen, instead of the rule saying this never happens, the rule is this rarely happens. This is so rare that it's spoken of in legend.
Gotcha.
Okay. That's the way you put brakes on those things, and yet you're able to use that stuff.
Hmm.
Okay? You're able to make the exception when breaking that rule makes for a really good story.
Hmm.
Okay?
Interesting.
So, yeah. So, and it becomes really, really critical that you understand that you never say never, Mm-hmm. You always say rarely, or to the best of our knowledge, or the world scholars agree. Well, the world scholars may be in agreement. They may also be wrong. Okay, so those are things that, you know, think about it in that world sense, and then give yourself the slip space to be able to play and rationalize that. So you want to make sure that world works. The second thing you're going to have to look at, and this is the tougher thing, you have to take the main characters of that book and you have to break down their growth arc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what that means is you have to know who they are at the beginning of the story. All right. So you have to know everything about them at the beginning of that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to project in your mind where they want to be
mm-hmm.
at the end of the story.
I did a really good job with that with Marana.
Okay, good.
I've already got that. That's the only piece that I know that I did right.
Okay.
Was her. Because where she starts at and where she ends at, wow.
Okay, those are really good, but this works as a revision on mm-hmm. a story, or but, it works when you're plotting.
But I have some characters that are a little weak that could definitely use that.
Right, so. but this is the really specific thing, which is important, okay, is that you know where they are at the start, mm-hmm. and it's good that you know where they are at the end, but you also have to have that third point, which is where they wanted to be. Where they
Ooh.
Think they're going. Because a lot of times, especially when you're starting a story, someone gets projected out to where they think they're going. They end up in a different spot. And you need to make sure why it is they didn't get to where they thought they were going. You need to make sure that some of the trials and travails, if they don't actually achieve that goal, and there's plenty of stories where somebody sets out and achieves their goal. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that story. But in the stories where they don't achieve their goal, you have to be able to figure out why it was that they didn't get there.
I think I did that. But again, I'm so far out on this.
Right, right,
that,
right.
And you're right. My perception of what the book is in my brain may be completely different from what's actually on the page.
And understand, that happens all the time. I remember when I was writing, some of the Battletech novels with Victor, a mainstay character, and I had written a little background for Victor, just of who I thought he was. And I started writing the book, and I had to go back to that after I was like 10 chapters in. Had to go back to that little bio to pick out a fact, and I realized that I had reversed his personality. I was 180 degrees off of where I thought I wanted to be, but the 180 degrees off made for a much better story, mm-hmm. and so I kept it. So that was, you know, who he had become in my brain was different from who I'd written down on the page, and who he'd become in my brain was much, much better. So, you know, you take that preconception, or you take that conception that you've got mentally, mm-hmm. chart that out, and then you can chart against the book to see where it goes. And the reason that it's important to chart out these character story arcs and to think ahead of that sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it's really useful to do, again, when you're revising or as you're plotting, is because you have to make sure that the effort matches the challenge.
Gotcha.
Okay, so if it's a little boy who wants to become king of the world and unite everybody in the world under his banner, that takes a lot of energy. That is a big goal. And the challenges and the forces that are working against him are also going to be fairly big. So, and they're going to be powerful. So you've got to make sure that he grows in power, that he accepts the responsibility, that it actually makes sense, other than just look, I tripped over a rock and underneath it, there's this amulet that makes me invulnerable.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Everybody's done with their third level D&D character that suddenly becomes, you know, 125th level. We don't want to do that.
Wow. Well, it's going to be an interesting journey, folks. So,
and we definitely want you coming along with us.
Absolutely.
And I'll certainly talk about more stuff that I'm doing with books that I'm doing at the same time. So, you know, we'll be getting it from, we're not just going to pick on Mike.
Okay.
And you guys can ask questions too. So
absolutely. It'll be very interactive.
Yeah.
But we're out of time for this show, but yeah, stay tuned. It's going to be a lot of fun.